Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, people will think that you're doing this great kind of selfless act. And I used to always say, well, like, before you compliment us, like, find out what kind of parents we are, because we could be bad at it.
Welcome to How To. I'm Amanda Ripley. 5 years ago, Marsha Chatelain and her husband decided they wanted to adopt a child, and they seemed like perfect candidates. Marsha's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author and a professor of history and African American studies at Georgetown. You might also recognize her voice from Slate's podcast, The Waves, where she was a beloved co-host.
My husband and I made the decision to become adoptive parents very early in our relationship. My husband had started a PhD. I had just finished one. We were early in our careers, and we just knew that we needed a lot of building time. And I felt like I didn't want to feel like we had to become parents at, you know, this moment because of my age, or because, you know, this was the time to have kids, but rather that, you know, we really had a deliberative process.
But adopting a child in America is kind of like getting on a roller coaster ride, the kind that can last for, well, years. There are dark tunnels, sharp curves, highs and lows, intrusive questions, and weirdly inappropriate comments from strangers.
It's incredibly, incredibly confusing. And the internet is also infused with very kind of biased or very framed ideas about adoption.
In the beginning, they pursued an international adoption, which seemed logical.
I'm from an immigrant family. I figured it would make sense for us to adopt from Haiti, where my family is from, because, you know, there's fewer cultural kind of barriers.
Years went by. They researched agencies, gathered documents, got many things notarized, underwent background checks and home visits and on and on. At one point, Marsha even got on a plane to hand deliver her documents to the agency in Indiana.
I had a bunch of documents like that, you know, copies of our marriage certificate, copies of birth certificates, all of this stuff done. And the idea of putting it in a FedEx envelope. And so I think I got like a plane ticket for like $120. And I was in the privileged position to both have the time and money and energy to just fly it on a plane, turn it in, wow, and just fly home. You know, as a professor and a writer, like I had a little time off, and this is what I did with my time off. And I was thinking to myself, like, if this stuff is gone, like, what am I going to do? And so all of this is to say that, you know, it's a lot.
And if that weren't enough, then came COVID and travel restrictions and government shutdowns. So they pivoted to a domestic private adoption, and another year went by. It started to feel like a ride they'd never get off. And then one day they got a call.
We were like people in, I don't know, like an 80s sitcom, where we were given fewer than 24 hours notice that a child was available for adoption, our son. Mm-hmm. And we went to Target that morning to get stuff for a baby. we had always thought that we would adopt older children. And so a baby kind of wasn't in our purview for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so we knew a lot about kind of the feeding issues of 2 and 3 year olds and attachment issues of toddlers. And we adopted our son at 3 days old.
Oh my gosh. Marsha, could you just tell us a little bit about your son?
Oh my God, he's so cute. No, it's actually, he is stunning and so cute. Aww. And so sweet and the best.
So Marsha's now made it through the woods. And that's why we brought her in today to give advice to someone who's just staring off at the forest on the horizon and wondering if the adoption process is right for them. Meet Victoria.
Now that I'm in these late 20s, I've been starting to think a little bit more ahead. And thinking about having a family, and one of the options that is kind of floating out there is adoption. But what you need to do to prepare for that, what kind of steps are taken before you try and adopt a child, all that is pretty opaque to me.
Victoria, a PhD student in San Francisco, doesn't know where to start. So today on the show, with Marsha's help, we're going to try to demystify the whole adoption process the best we can, and maybe challenge your assumptions about family making altogether. Stay with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Nearly 140,000 children are adopted by American families every year, and a lot of parents in waiting come to adoption as their last resort. But for Victoria, this is one of the first options she's considering.
I think on some level, it's an intuition that this would be something I would really love doing. There's not a certainty for me when I'll be able to have children, or if I'll have a partner, whether that partner will be male or female. These kinds of things made me think adoption might be a good option.
Victoria, are you kind of a planner in general?
I would say I'm a planner, yes. I'm the person who has an idea for a trip, and I get a few people to say yes, and then I immediately start planning, and then I have the Google Doc and the links, and I think I love planning almost as much as the actual experience sometimes.
Oh, good. This is good, right, Marsha?
Maybe this will help out.
So we shouldn't be shocked that you're thinking ahead on planning for possibly adopting one day.
Yeah.
You know, just hypothetically speaking, what kind of time frame are you thinking about?
Maybe in 5 to 10 years, somewhere in that range.
Okay, now you might be thinking, why is she even thinking about this? It's like half a decade away. But as we already heard with Marsha, the process can take years. There are different rules for domestic versus international adoptions, and then other rules that vary from state to state. Plus, private adoption agencies can be their own maze to navigate.
My sense was that there are a lot of private adoption agencies that have put up information, but it's hard to know how much of that is universal, how much of that is more specific to their company. I didn't find a lot of resources that seemed to be maybe unbiased or coming from the experience of people who've actually adopted.
Hmm. And was it easy to understand the process? Like step one, step two?
I have no idea what the process is.
So it was not easy to understand?
No, not easy.
What kind of research do you do in your work?
So I'm a neuroscientist.
Okay. So something very simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
So you're a neuroscientist trying to learn about adoption, and so far online it is not making sense. Is that right? And straightforward,
yeah.
Which suggests to me there's a bigger problem here. But I'm wondering, Marsha, what you're thinking hearing this so far.
I was also doing a PhD when I started learning a little bit about this, and I couldn't figure a lot of it out.
Marsha, if you could just take us back in time and tell us a little bit about what you might tell yourself if you were back at the beginning of this journey.
People say really intrusive things to you when you make that decision. And there's a lot of assumptions that are made. There was assumptions that we struggled with fertility issues. There's assumptions that we did this because we thought of ourselves as like good or moral people. I think the first step is you have to disabuse yourself of the notion that choosing adoption for family making is kind of morally superior than any other way of family making, or that you're saving a child, or that you're doing something other than making a choice to build a family. It's like one of many ways to do that. And then I think the second thing is that, you know, it's such a personal choice that you do within the context of community. And so I know some people who have been interested in adoption, and they know that in their larger family culture, that this would be really hard because either they're open to adopting a child of a different race and their family is incredibly racist and problematic. I know that in some families, they have some kind of old school ideas about adoption as a secret. And so that conflicts with, you know, very proven ideas. Rethinking the way that we understand adoption in a family as nothing to, you know, be kept a secret. So there's all of this like stuff. And I think when you start talking to people about your choice, you get like their emotional baggage and their projection, and it can get really gross really fast.
Part of preparing yourself is thinking about your various family members, the baggage that they're going to bring to this.
Oh, and your personal baggage. Oh my gosh. I mean, I love being a parent. I love it more than I could ever imagine. I'm having the most fun I've ever had. And having a child can be really emotionally triggering. All you think about is what you were like at that age, who was taking care of you, who didn't take care of you. I mean, if, you know, I highly recommend therapy as one of the greatest ways to start this process.
So here's our first tip. If you're beginning to consider adoption, sit down with your partner and even your extended family and take a kind of inventory of everyone's expectations. In this way, you can start to build a support network of people you can count on, not just during this process, but into parenthood. Also, check in with yourself or your partner periodically to make sure this choice is still right for you. You can always change your mind.
Just because you made one decision at one point doesn't mean that you can't ever revisit it. I think that's really important. And I think the other thing is really spending time. I mean, this is also kind of what's problematic about choosing an adoption provider. Sometimes it's hard to get a picture of what the agency is like, because when people are really happy with outcomes, they're very, very happy. And when people are disappointed, they're very disappointed. So I would spend some time just getting to learn about the different providers in the area that you're in and really taking your time to choose who you want to work with.
Marcia, do you think it makes sense to start saving money if people can?
Yes.
That's hard, yeah.
I do, because, you know, again, there are a lot of people who have a lot of feelings about the cost of this. And there's some really, you know, incisive critiques about, you know, are you spending money to purchase a child? And, you know, that those discussions can get really impassioned. I would see it as, you know, like saving for something substantial in your life. And there's different, I mean, there's a range of costs, and they come again at different moments. Some are scaled by your income. Like, let's say an agency says it's $20,000 and you think that's so much money all at once. But you have to consider that it's a very long process of getting documentation, of, you know, paying for a home study. And so you can think, okay, you know, over 3 or 4 or 5 years, what can I put away towards those costs? It is expensive.
That home study that Marcia just mentioned, that's one of the most important steps in this process. And it's not just expensive. It's, well, invasive.
We took a psych eval with a trained psychologist. You have to disclose any prior criminal convictions you've had and explain the situations. Our social worker talked to us about our families and our family dynamics. They asked if we could talk about our partners and, like, you know, what stands out about them. We've had disclosed all of our financial information, our assets, our liabilities. There's reference letters from friends, people who you've interacted with in different settings, you know, your driving record. There's a physical that looks at, you know, your prior medical history, and that can be really prohibitive and can also be really intimidating for people with chronic illness or certain conditions. So like it's a deep dive, folks. It's a deep, deep dive.
Wow.
Part of me is thinking, oh, well, all this, you know, testing, evaluation, and it somehow makes me feel better. You don't know that the standards you're being held up to are fair in any way, but something about being vetted makes me think that I would be more secure and more confident in my own ability to be a parent if I were still allowed.
I'll be honest, I understand what you mean. It's weird. I think it is a tough process, but there are parts of it that I'm really grateful for, because it's not just kind of like being asked all these personal questions and made to feel very uncomfortable. There's also continuing education that's part of it. And, you know, one of the things that I found in our education process that was really helpful was thinking about attachment and, you know, the various ways, you know, parents attached with children. And then there's some real practical considerations about respecting and understanding some of the differences that you will have from your child because of the experiences that they may have had in foster care or in orphanages overseas. And then there's some really powerful resources from adoptees who are critical of the adoption system. And, you know, engaging with all of those, I think, is really helpful because it moves you away from the purely romantic idea of becoming a parent to one that feels like a little bit more nuanced and textured. And I think I think that's like a good thing.
That part sounds like a wonderful experience.
It's like getting a third PhD.
The other thing to prepare for, of course, is the waiting.
This is like so corny and so cheesy, but you know, I would have waited 30 years to be my son's mom. From this vantage point, I could say, you know, it was all worth the wait. But I do know people who really struggle with these very long waiting periods, or families that have struggled with receiving a placement and the placement not carrying through to a finalized adoption. And, you know, I think those are the things that you have to kind of existentially prepare for, even if you can't always be emotionally prepared for.
Victoria, is this making you feel better or worse? I'm feeling worse, but maybe
sounds
that's appropriate.
Like a really good story once it worked out okay in the end.
Yeah, right. Now we know the ending.
I have a feeling that we are kindred spirits, Victoria, of type A brainy types. And so, like, I mean, it's like it prepped me. Like, you know, now when we have to file, like, you know, paper, I had to get a social security card for my son, and I stayed in the line for like 5 hours. And it was just like, oh, this is part of it, right? Like, parenting is this incredibly, like, emotional and deeply bureaucratic thing that you do. You know, it's like me trying to sign up for swim lessons and getting, like, shut out every, like, portal. I'm like, oh, this is what it's like, and this is also part of it.
Huh, and it puts everything in perspective. So then when you have to get the school health form filled out, you're like on it. It's not intimidating to you.
Yeah, no, I'm totally permission slip mom now because, you know, I was like FBI background check mom for many years.
So we've already given you a ton of things to do, but what about the things you shouldn't do? After the break, we're going to talk about parenthood and what you should never say to an adoptive parent. Don't go anywhere. We're back with our listener, Victoria, who's considering adoption, and our expert, Marcia Chatelain, who spent 5 years adopting her son. If you Google how to adopt, you'll get a wide range of results, as you might imagine. But scroll with care, because not all online resources are created equal.
Initially, when I wanted to learn more from adoptive parents, a lot of it was about fertility challenges. I just didn't share that experience. And I do think that there is something that experience then informs how you pursue adoptions. There is a lot of anxiety about family making that happens in some of these online communities. For me, taking in a lot of those narratives was just not going to be healthy for me. So I just didn't spend a lot of time doing that. Now that we have our child I'm part of a Black Adoptive Parents Facebook group, and that group is a little bit more diverse in terms of how people came to family making.
That's something I've thought a little bit about. So my mother is of Asian descent. My father is Caucasian, white, and I think because of that, we do have some experience, like talking about how it is blending into other cultures and like sticking out. But in terms of like actually adopting a child, I think it's best to hear it straight from them, right? To know what they would think in terms of like what the ethnicity of an adopted child for me would be. Because maybe, you know, you never know what people will say, even in your own extended family.
Yeah, you know, Marcia, you mentioned that people will say intrusive things. Can you give an example of maybe some less helpful things that people said to you, and maybe also what would have been better so that listeners out there don't make the exact same mistakes if friends and family members are going through the adoption process?
So, you know, I think most of the time people are so well-intentioned and they either have bad boundaries or have been subject to a culture that misrepresents, you know, adoption in so many ways. So I've told people that we were in the process of, you know, seeking to adopt a child, and someone will say, well, what's wrong with you guys? You know, like, you know, which one of you has fertility issues? The other things that I've heard from people, it's a knee-jerk reaction where you will tell someone that you're going to pursue adoption, and then they tell you a story that they either heard or someone they knew that had a very negative adoption experience. Where and sometimes it's like in a very extreme kind of situation. And I don't know why, but the impulse, maybe it's like to warn the person or to say like, oh, I think it just shows that even with people my age or even a little younger, that there's just been a lot of kind of generationally negative perceptions of adoption. So that the first thing you say is like, you know, this child that really struggled within a family structure, and they often attribute it to adoption. Though we know that, you know, children can struggle in a number of situations.
Marcia, what do you think is the best way to tackle some of these myths or stereotypes around adoption? Because I feel like you mentioned, there are two main narratives I tend to hear. One is the saintly adoptive parents, and one is the sad parents or potential parents struggling with infertility. And it sounds like there's a lot more.
You know, there are a lot of layers that I think are exposed and that are kind of put in your lap in this process. And I think the more thoughtful you can be in how you engage with people and say, well, you know, here are some things that I've considered, and I understand that, you know, the choice to parent isn't about choosing everything about your child. It's about being open to a set of experiences and possibilities.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, Marcia, you mentioned that we have these kind of reductionist narratives about adoption, right? Like, and Victoria, you mentioned this too. It's either like the parent as savior or the parent as tormentor. What would be a movie you'd like to see, Marcia, about adoption?
Oh, that's it. I would love to just see a movie about a family that doesn't know what they're doing and then figures it out and can honestly address the like negative emotions of their child. I mean, that movie no one would go watch, but I don't know about, you know, an adult child saying like, here's the things that you did well. Here are the things that I wish you could have worked harder on. And the parent saying, thank you so much for that feedback. I love you for giving us that. Like, let's go get something to eat. You know, that it isn't like that the most dramatic parts of the experience isn't always about how the family comes together. Sometimes the most dramatic parts are, you know, the ways that we kind of endure through it, you know? And so I think that's the movie that no one wants to see and no one will make.
I would totally
it just
go
needs
see
the right
movie.
Soundtrack, yes. You know?
Absolutely.
Here's our next tip. You gotta learn when to engage and when to set boundaries. And try to get comfortable with the messiness of families, which includes adoptive ones.
The only thing I will say, I remember talking to a friend about this and saying that, you know, there are things about my child's experience of being in our family that I will never fully understand. But understanding that our family can be a source of a lot of joy and happiness, and also a lot of, you know, bittersweet emotions and sometimes a place of pain, embracing that because part of being a parent is being attentive to that, I think is something that you have to become more and more comfortable with. Like, there will be times that being in this family may be very painful for my son, and really embracing that as much as the moments that being in this family is very joyful for him. And I think that taking the time to really, you know, like, sit with that, I think is super, super helpful.
Marcia, I'm curious, you're a year into parenthood, right? Did your son just turn one, or?
He turned one in late March.
Nice. What has surprised you so far, 1 year in?
Just how much I love it. Like, so much of my life has been defined by being a teacher and watching college students like grow as they learn things. And I get to have that experience on this like tiny and amazing level. Like, my son started pointing, and now he can point to like the food he wants to eat. And to be able to kind of bear witness to that is just so incredible.
That's nice. Yeah. No, I remember vividly when my son was pretty young and he was in his high chair and I was giving him some scrambled eggs or something. You know, all you do is just seems like you just feed him and feed him and feed him and change him and feed him. And he clapped. And it was like, oh my God, it was so awesome. You know, and it's a real privilege to kind of experience that alongside another human.
That sounds incredible, guys.
I think that there are a million different ways to be happy in the world. And I am very, very glad that I got to experience this form of happiness.
Victoria, what's something you're looking forward to about being a parent?
You know, now that you guys are telling stories about your kids, I'm 7 years older than my younger sister, and I'm remembering when she was little, even though I was still a kid, like, those... Even that was a kind of magic to see, like, someone so small starting to become their own person. And I remember the transition from being an only child at age 7 to being an older sister at age 7. And it was kind of a shock at the time,
yeah.
But it was something that I really took to, and I grew to really, I don't know, cherish that as part of my identity. And like, I was one of the protectors for this little kid, and that's something I think I will really enjoy as a parent someday.
I have a good feeling. I think you're going to love it.
Thank you to Victoria for not waiting 5 years to ask her question, and to Marcia Chatelain for all of her hard-earned wisdom. Also, you should definitely check out Marcia's books, including her most recent, the Pulitzer Prize-winning franchise, The Golden Arches in Black America. How about you? Do you have a future problem that needs a crystal ball? Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001, and we might have you on the show. And while you're at it, do me a favor. After you're done listening, find the share button on your podcast app and send the show to a friend or family member. That's how we find more people to help. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson and Katie Shepard produced this show. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown, remixed by Merritt Jacob, our technical director. Charles Duhigg created this show. I'm Amanda Ripley. Thanks for listening.